Hey everybody, we are doing a first in more than a decade here in Texas.
What is that? Oh, I thought you meant the podcast. You meant in the state.
Yeah, we're not going to
do it. What is this? Because I don't know about this.
First of all, this podcast hasn't been around for a full decade yet. And secondly, we're not doing anything too crazy on here.
So what's the first?
This state is about to do a first in more than a decade, and that is elect a new attorney general. Ken Paxton has had some staying power there, and I mean, through multiple scandals and et cetera, investigation, he has remained. The only thing that made him go is running for U.S. Senate against
Ken
John Cornyn.
Paxton left on his own.
Yeah.
And he has beat back all kinds of opponents, you know, in previous elections. But he walked away, and now the Republican race for Texas Attorney General is one of the biggest in the state. Mm-hmm. The Democratic race is also one we're definitely watching. Joe Jaworski and Nathan Johnson. Mm-hmm. But the Republican race for Texas Attorney General is the big one. All four of the candidates, Joan Huffman, Aaron Reitz, Mays Middleton, and Chip Roy, they're all going to be in Dallas in a couple of weeks to debate in Dallas, their first and only debate before the primary. A lot of people are going to be watching this.
And we should point out that, you know, this is drawing, you know, these four people into this primary who already had big jobs.
Yeah.
And they're stepping away from those jobs. We've got two Texas senators, we have a Texas congressman, and we have an official who was in the unofficial with the DOJ and the Trump administration, who have all decided that this is the job they want next, and they're putting everything on the line for it.
Yeah, so over the last few months, we've interviewed them one by one, face to face, gotten to talk to them, you know, really kind of dig in on a number of things. We're going to talk about that in the podcast here. We talked about, you know, who they are, what they want to do, why they are attacking certain opponents, not everyone, but certain opponents, and whether they would change anything in Ken Paxton's office. The Attorney General's office has faced a lot of scrutiny over the past few years that Ken Paxton has been in there, more than a decade that he's been in there.
And a lot of money has been poured into this race. Again, you've got four candidates going for the nomination on the GOP side, and all of them hoping to move up a few ticks. The thing is, you know, every campaign, of course, has its own internal polling. We haven't seen a lot of public polling on this in this race. Chip Roy, Congressman Chip Roy, has been, from what I've seen anyway, from the polling, out front by, you know, pretty substantial margin. But again, so few samples have been taken that, you know, after you run enough ads, you know, do we really have a finger on the pulse of where this race is?
Yeah, and the only two people running ads, of course, are Mays Middleton and Chip Roy. He told us, you'll hear in the podcast here in just a moment, he told us that he thinks he might be able to win this without a runoff.
Chip Roy.
Four people in the race, you'd think that would require a runoff. But
that's a tough bar.
It is a tough bar. He says he's polling, you know, high 40s. He might be able to get across 50%. So the question is, who are these people? You've seen their ads. You've seen the message that they want you to see. Not all of them. Some of them don't have enough money to get on TV. It's an expensive state to advertise in. So we asked those questions for you. So we're going to start out with all four of these candidates. Who are these candidates running as Republicans for Texas Attorney General? Aaron Reitz is the first up. He is a former DOJ official. He worked under Paxton in the Texas Attorney General's office, and he took our questions as well. Let's talk about your resume for a moment. I looked at your LinkedIn. You haven't been in places very long. 2 years with Senator Cruz, almost 3 years with General Paxton, a couple of months at the DOJ serving under President Trump. Why so much moving around?
This is the nature of politics. For fortunately or unfortunately, look, when politics moves fast, you spend a few years with a certain principal fighting the fights that you're assigned to fight, and you move up or on to the next thing. And so, look, I don't think that by any sort of political standards, those tenures are particularly short. I'm very proud of everything that we've accomplished during my 3 years with Paxton, 2 years with Cruz, my time at the Justice Department, leading the Office of Legal Policy. The Office of Legal Policy is responsible for coordinating, planning, and executing all of the major issues of importance for the Attorney General and to the administration. And I was proud to spend my time with the Attorney General of the United States working on several high-profile matters. But then the question became, when the Texas Attorney General spot came open, the question for many Texans and for myself was, who are we going to deploy back to Texas to succeed Ken Paxton? And in my opinion, my mentor's opinion, the folks that I worked with, the grassroots, it was clear. Texans want, as their next Texas Attorney General, a true MAGA attorney and a warrior for the Constitution. So I'm taking all of those years of experience and I'm bringing them to bear to serve Texas faithfully as the next AG.
All right, next up, Joan Huffman, a state senator from Houston.
You're one of the longest serving senators there in the Texas Senate, now the second most senior Republican. What do you say to Republican primary voters who look at your expansive resume here and say, might look a little bit more like an insider in Austin rather than an outsider, which so many people want these days?
Well, sure, I've been in the Senate a long time and I have a long career in public service, but I would say I'm anything but an insider. I have always stayed very connected to my constituents, and I've worked very hard to represent them. I've got a long history, but you want someone with a long history who has, I've got 20 years as a prosecutor and a judge, another 16 as a senator. But if you look around, I am running with the support of law enforcement. I don't have the endorsements of other big elected officials, and that's because I'm in my own lane, I'm on my own person, and I'm running on what I have done in my record and what I've accomplished in my long career.
Here is Mays Middleton, the state senator from Galveston.
So this is a show me, don't tell me business, right? People are tired of being told what politicians are gonna do. Show us the results, and I can show you those results. I'm the only one in this AG's race that's been protested at the Texas Capitol. They had these big ugly green signs with my face on it, X's through my eyes, and they call me the bathroom bigot. Why? Because I don't want men in my little girl's restroom or locker room or shower. And this is common sense. And I fought the woke left's radical gender ideology and won. I authored and passed the Save Women's Sports Act and the strongest Women's Privacy Act in America. Not only that, I fought the atheists and won and authored and passed the law to put prayer back into our public schools and also the Ten Commandments back on the wall of every classroom in Texas. I have delivered results. This is not just about talking about it. I can show you the results.
And now Chip Roy, the congressman from Austin.
This is a four-person race. Tell us what internal polling shows about where you stand right now.
Well, Jason, great to be with you. And look, the first thing about politics is the only poll that matters is on election day. So we're going around the state doing everything we need to do to try to make sure people understand why I'm running for attorney general, while I'm also burning both ends of the candle while being a member of Congress and trying to finish that strong. I haven't missed a vote, don't intend to miss a vote. I have a job to do representing Texas 21, but polling looks very good. Both independent polls, our internal polls, they show us pushing 50, and we need 50, obviously, to avoid a runoff. Every poll I've seen has me well north of 40, and most of my opponents are in single digits and occasionally in the low double digits at 10 to 12 to 15 points. So we feel good about our standing, but we're not taking it for granted. We're going around the state trying to earn every vote we can.
Do you expect this could, avoid a runoff altogether?
It's certainly possible. I mean, our numbers show us pushing 50. And we're doing everything we can to go around the state and make the case that I'm the guy that's ready for the job, prepared for the job, former prosecutor, former first assistant attorney general. I've been there. I know how to set up the office. I've done it before. I've got a proven track record as a conservative. And I've been in the courtroom and I've been prosecuting people, putting people in jail. And, I think that resume has been speaking to the people of Texas and the response has been very favorable. So again, we're going to put our foot down on the gas. We want to save people money. And there's another important piece to this, and you know it well as a close political observer. In 2020, I had to run a general election campaign against Wendy Davis, who had a very high profile. It was a $30 million race, the third most expensive race in the country. And I had to run it when I was representing a good chunk of Austin, Texas, in an R+3 or 4 district. And we won with 7 points. We outperformed the president. We did a great job. And I would take that to the battlefield when we head into November in the general elections.
Again, that's a big pronouncement there, and them's fighting words when you are in a competitive primary that, we've already seen mudslinging in this contest. But boy, that just, I think it's like a little extra thorn in the side of your opponents when you go, not only do I think I'm going to do well against them, I think I'm going to just, basically roll the ball and come back with a strike here right in the primary and not have to take this down to a runoff.
I'm going to clobber you guys, you guys. He feels confident, though, and I was, I don't want to say I was struck by the confidence, but I was struck by the confidence.
Yeah.
It's
kind of Chip Roy's brand, though.
Yeah, but I've never interviewed him.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, we've reached out to him. Schedules have always been an issue. I've never interviewed him until this interview for this podcast here. And it was interesting to hear from him. He really seems like a straight talker. And he wasn't on talking points. He wasn't, you know, reciting rehearsed lines that consultants have given him. It was interesting to hear from him. And because he feels so confident, because of that, what do you expect? Attack ads, right?
Right.
And if you've been watching TV anywhere in the state over the past few weeks,
there have been those.
You have seen Mays Middleton, who, by the way, is, you know, trying to be known as MAGA Mays Middleton.
Yeah.
The alliteration's great there.
Yeah.
But he is going after Chip Roy pretty hard. So we asked him about that. Here's what he said.
President Trump said I was a MAGA champion when I ran for Texas Senate. He also said my conservative record was second to none. And compare that to Chip Roy. You know, while I was fighting for the America First agenda, he was on the floor of the U.S. House saying that Trump had committed impeachable conduct, saying that he stood with Liz Cheney against the president. Not only that, wanted Liz Cheney to run the House Republican Conference. And just recently,
after January 6th.
Yes, this is after January 6th. And not only that, his most recent antic, you know, I fought to ban child transgender surgeries. This is gender mutilation. This is an evil practice. And there was a great bill in Congress to ban that practice on the federal level. He offered an amendment, tried to offer an amendment to make it not a ban and allow that practice to continue, which would have given a huge victory to Gavin Newsom and, frankly, a huge victory to the transgender lobby. And one of our leading Christian conservative activists in Washington, D.C., Terry Schilling, said there's no greater ally to the transgender lobby in Washington than Chip Roy.
Congressman, we have seen one of your competitors, Mays Middleton, attack your conservative credentials, specifically about things you said about Donald Trump after January 6th, saying Trump's actions were, quote, clearly impeachable, and your comments also called him reckless that day. Curious now that you're running for attorney general looking for the Republican primary vote, do you regret those comments now?
Look, I always stand for what I believe in defending the Constitution and defending the rule of law, and I'm a strong supporter of President Trump. And in fact, if you look at the data, I've got the strongest record in Texas. So I think it's somewhat laughable that David Mays Middleton, who's funding these super PAC ads, would be taking shots at my conservative track record when it's fairly unassailable. And but you know what? I think I'd be doing that, too, if I was spending $10 million in polling the single digits.
Boy, that tells you how ugly it's gotten right there. You don't take away another man's alliteration from, you know, that he's built his whole campaign on with all of these ads. That's a real shot.
You caught that. The David Mays Middleton. That was a direct shot at MAGA Mays Middleton.
Took away one of those M's.
Yeah. You know, and he said there, too, Chip Roy said that something about, you know, if I spent $10 million and was only polling in single digits, I might be, you know, attacking as well. Mays Middleton comes from a family oil business. He personally loaned his campaign $10 million. So that's exactly what Chip Roy was talking about there.
But it's interesting. We've been seeing these two, and I mean, they've just been heavyweighting it out on the airwaves. You know, if you spent any time in front of a television set here in Texas over the past month or so especially, man, these things have just been coming one after the other. And you don't hear as much from the other two candidates, although they've had their moment where they took each other on as well. There's kind of these different camps of people going against each other, but not against everyone necessarily.
And I don't know why that is. I mean, the only thing I was thinking is, well, Aaron Reitz was the first in the race here, and Joan Huppam was pretty quick after him. And I was thinking, well, maybe just because they were the first two in the race, they started, going after each other pretty quickly, really early on last summer. It's interesting to hear what they have to say about each other. Joan Huppam makes no bones about issues she has with Aaron Reitz, and Aaron Reitz came right back too.
Listen, here's No Love Lost Part 2.
None.
One of your Republican opponents, Joan Huffman, when she announced, she took a shot at you and said, listen, Texans don't want somebody, a younger person trying to climb the political ladder. What's your response to that?
Well, I posted my response shortly after that.
It was a Ronald Reagan comment too,
well,
right?
I appreciate you picking up on that. Yes, that's exactly right. Look, I think the claim that I'm young is misleading and maybe even dubious. I think my hairstyle passes me as much older. And so, you know, like the great Ronald Reagan once said, I will not exploit for political purposes my opponent's youth and inexperience. And so, look, that Joan Huffman is gonna take her position, and she's gonna try to frame me in the way that she wants to, and that's fine. But you know what? I'm gonna run on my record. My record is a long history of investigating, suing, litigating, appealing, defending Texas state law on all of the major issues that Texans care about, from the Bill of Rights, Second Amendment, border security, election integrity, you name the issue, and I've spent my professional career working and diving deep. And that's what distinguishes me from other candidates, because the other folks will not have this relevant experience. I do, and I'm ready on day one to make it happen.
One of your competitors, Aaron Wrights, labeled you as the liberals candidate, what he said, and some activists have portrayed you as too moderate for this position. How do you respond to that?
Look, people can look at my votes. I have a long history of being a very conservative senator. I don't think anyone would argue that the lieutenant governor, Dan Patrick, is not conservative. You know, I served with him in the Senate, and when he became lieutenant governor, he made me the first chair of state affairs where all his conservative, the Senate's conservative legislation passed through. Since then, he's given me great power in the positions that he's appointed me to as the chairs of the committee I've already talked about. And I'm pretty sure we can all agree that Dan Patrick would not let someone who was a moderate or not a conservative lead these very important committees. So I stand on my record. Aaron Wright says a lot of things that aren't, you got to take it and look at the research yourself and look at the evidence yourself and make decisions about what you believe the actual facts to be.
And that's sort of a constant theme that we've seen here, is that you're not MAGA enough. You're not, conservative enough. And we've been seeing that in the ads. And again, in these two separate little attacks that are going on between these four candidates, we're seeing that as a common theme here.
Yeah, it's the
appealing
conservative
to that,
truth test, you know?
Yeah, and you're
who's
appealing
more conservative
to that primary voter. And that matters to those primary voters who show up.
Yeah, it does. And at the end of the day, you know, those voters, those Republican primary voters, are going to decide this. But at the end of the day, these are all four Republicans. They all agree on essentially the same issues. They want to, seal the border. They want to go after the Republican red meat issues here. But they do have different priorities in all this stuff here. And Joan Huffman starts us off on this, on what her priority is and how it's different from everyone else's.
I've also heard you emphasize potentially being the first woman and the first mother to serve as Texas Attorney General if elected. How much do you want GOP primary voters, though, to factor in gender into this race?
Well, you know, I don't say I'm running because I'm a woman, but I think we can always agree that women bring a little different perspective to problem solving. But I stand on my record and I add that I'm a woman, and I would be the first woman attorney general in the history of Texas. You know, when I became a senator, I was only the 13th female senator in the history of Texas. That's kind of hard to believe in 2008. And I think we look around and we say, you know, here we are in 2025 and there's never been a female attorney general. I think there's time for one that's qualified and here before the voters and asking for their vote.
All right, here's Mays Middleton, the state senator from Galveston. If you win this position, what are the top two things that you would want to accomplish?
One of the first things that I want to do is use every resource and tool available in the AG's office to back up President Trump in his border security and deportation agenda. And there is a very powerful tool in the AG's office. It's called the Ban on Sanctuary Cities. And what that will allow me to do is sue those that are in the way of that border security agenda for three things: civil penalties, criminal penalties, and removal from office. That's the most powerful tool. Not only that, I want to start an anti-corruption division to go after cartels, organized crime, you know, waste, fraud, and abuse. We're seeing a lot about that in the news right now. But cutting it out of the budget is not enough. We have to go after those that have committed the waste and the fraud and the abuse. And also, we don't know what came over the border in the last 4 years. When Joe Biden had an open border and he was putting our citizens second at the expense of illegal immigrants, but it's up to us to clean that up, to keep our families safe, because my goal is really simple here. I want to make sure that Texas is the safest state in America to live and raise a family.
And this is Chip Roy, the congressman from Austin.
So on day one, the first thing I'd be doing is to make sure that we've got the strongest office for the biggest law firm in Texas to be able to carry out the duties of the Office of Attorney General. But the issues that the people that I'm talking to and the people that I represent, they care about making sure Texas is ready to secure its own border no matter what happens, no matter what a future president looks like. We cannot have what we saw under the Biden-Mayorkas regime. So you need a strong attorney general who's ready to litigate that stuff in court. be a voice for making sure we do what we need to do to have a secure border and enforce the laws. Secondly, you got to make sure you're getting criminals off the streets and working with DAs that want to work with us, but also pushing the DAs who are being stubborn, who are, you know, frankly, purposely allowing a lot of criminals to be on the streets, endangering the people of this state, whether it's in Austin and San Antonio, which I'm more familiar with in terms of my representation, but also Dallas and Houston and all the people I'm talking to. And I'm going to break your rule of two, and I'm going to at least add a third, which is a major issue that I'm hearing about across the state of Texas and that I care about, is the Islamification of Texas and the extent to which we've got Epic City and growing relationships between organizations in this state and dangerous terrorist organizations. CARE notably is one, and that's why I've been introducing legislation to deal with these matters in D.C. There are a number of other important issues, but those are the main ones.
And finally, here's Aaron Reitz.
Let's talk about the next big challenges, legal challenges this state faces. What do you think they are over the next decade or so?
Look, I think that it's border security. I think that it's
but
illegal.
But the border's secure right now. I mean, when President Trump came in, there's no one's coming across anymore.
Look, here's what I would tell you. For the next, it is true that President Trump has secured the border. There's still a whole lot of mess that we need to clean up. And so this administration and Texans need an AG to partner with them to continue, not only to continue to secure the border, but also to clean up the mess as a result of the invasion of illegal aliens over the course of the Biden administration. But my first term as Texas AG is going to be characterized by two distinct chapters. Chapter one, from 26 to 28, is going to be deep and close partnership with this administration to uphold the rule of law and enforce law and order, okay? The second chapter is, remember, in 28, there's going to be a presidential election.
Sure.
If the tables turn, God forbid, we're hoping it doesn't, but if the tables turn and a Democrat ascends to the White House, there is no one in this race who is better proven to be fighting from Texas an overreaching, liberal, anti-American Democratic administration as I did. In fact, Attorney General Ken Paxton described me many times as his offensive coordinator, who was responsible under his leadership for managing and facilitating the Texas v. Biden docket. And so we may see a repeat of that, Texas v. whatever the next Democratic administration is, and there's only one guy in the race who's got a proven track record doing it and doing it successfully, and it's me.
So again, whoever wins this primary and goes on to the general is hoping to replace Ken Paxton, the outgoing attorney general, who's now running for U.S. Senate here in Texas. I was down there a couple of years ago covering his impeachment trial, and something became starkly clear in that trial, and that is that Ken Paxton has some very loyal comrades in the Texas legislature among Republicans. But boy, there were quite a number of Republicans who also wouldn't have felt bad if he had just gone on and gone away. And so the question is, you know, are there other Republicans who want a big change here? Do they want something that is very different from what we've been getting with Ken Paxton for more than a decade?
Yeah, but the danger here is that the Republican primary voter loves Ken Paxton. Mm-hmm. They love him. So it's tough for them to say, listen, we want to blow up the office and start all over. But there are a lot of Texans saying, listen, it's time for a hard reset in the Texas Attorney General's office because it's gotten way too political. I've heard that from Republicans and obviously Democrats.
And you don't run for a big office like this and put in all the work and do all the fundraising if you don't want to put your own mark on the office, too.
So it is a fair question. Would you change anything in the Attorney General's office post Paxton? So the first interview here is with Chip Roy.
And looking back over General Paxton's tenure here, do you think he's made any mistakes that you would want to correct if you were elected?
Well, I look at it from the perspective of we've had a run here in Texas where we've had great leadership that has attracted people to want to move to the state, growing economy, generally strong state with respect to the rule of law. But we're getting the tension right now, right, between some who don't want to follow the rule of law. We're seeing this unfold in Minneapolis. We're seeing it unfold in places across the country. So, look, I want to be able to build on that legacy. Look, there's always things you might do a little bit differently. That'd be true whether it's Ken Paxton, whether it was Attorney General Abbott or Attorney General Cornyn, right? I mean, there are going to be things you're going to do differently. But we've got a strong legacy of law enforcement, of child support collection, of doing the job you're supposed to do to defend the state of Texas. And I want to carry that forward. And there's other issues we didn't get into before, like election integrity, which you know, I'm leading in Washington. I'm the lead author of the SAVE Act, which is one of the core pieces of legislation we're trying to do to make sure only citizens vote in our elections. And, you know, again, across the state of Texas, this is what people want. They want a strong, sovereign, secure state. And that's the legacy I want to carry forward.
All right, here's Aaron Reitz.
You've worked in that office under General Paxton. What kind of changes would you like to make to the Attorney General's office?
Yeah, look, I think that Attorney General Paxton has left an outstanding legacy now for over the past 10 years. And so what I really want to do is I want to press the gas on a lot of the issues that we're working
on. What does
with.
That look like?
Look, I think that, like I said a moment ago, I think the first chapter of my tenure as Texas AG is going to be deep, close, proven, and fully integrated working mm-hmm. with this administration. And then if the administration flips in 28, which again, I hope that it doesn't, you're going to get all-out offensive coordination against a lawless anti-Texan administration. And so look, we're inheriting a great legacy, and I think that we need to double down on a lot of the things that we're doing, and look forward to hiring a great team that's going to help me lead one of the largest Republican Attorney General office in the country.
This is Joan Huffman from Houston.
Attorney General Ken Paxton leaving the office, obviously, to run for U.S. Senate here. His tenure, I don't have to tell you, has been defined by the impeachment in the House, the clearing in the Senate, but scandal and other corruption charges have surrounded that. Is there a specific practice or culture in the AG's office that you would want to get rid of on day one? And is there one that you'd like to keep on day one?
I like to talk about the positive things that I would like to accomplish. And I think that Paxton has done some good things working on federal overreach when it was appropriate. Some of these woke corporations who are hurting Texans, and I would certainly follow through with those types of lawsuits. But I would have a different focus, and I would focus more on the law enforcement side of the AG's office. I think that there has been a neglect of working with local prosecutors, local law enforcement to keep Texans safe. And I would use every tool, every law that we have on day one, using my background and my extensive experience, relationship with prosecutors and law enforcement. I have huge law enforcement support across the state of Texas. Prosecutors have recently, for the fourth time, given me the Texas District County and Attorneys Association Law and Order Award, long name, but because I have worked with them on common sense but really powerful legislation that keep Texans safe. I will use those relationships on day one to start working towards making Texans safe, and I'll have a plan to do that.
And finally, Mays Middleton here.
Has Ken Paxton, the incumbent, made any mistakes that you'd like to correct?
So one of the things that is really important to me is continuing that fight for conservative values. He's been an excellent fighter for those values that I hold dear, you know, Christian conservative values, faith, family, freedom, yeah. The things that this state was founded on. And look, Texas, there's not another one to move to. This is what we were founded on. I think of our founding fathers here, where in our Constitution it says this: humbly invoking the blessings of Almighty God, right? That's a prayer. That's what that is. It's a Christian prayer. And one of the things that's been important to me personally is fighting these woke interests that are trying to destroy our state and drag it down, like New York and California. And, you know, a good example of that is I took on the woke vaccine lobby and authored and passed the strongest ban on COVID vaccine mandates in America. And recently, this session, I took on the soda lobby, the big soda lobby. I know that sounds strange, but look, we were spending $1 billion per year on taxpayer-funded soda in Texas in the food stamp program. And I took them on and won and kicked soda and candy out of our taxpayer-funded food stamp program in Texas.
All right, so there you've heard it. Again, very little polling, though, in this race up to now. And I guess we'll all get an idea of the polls when people actually go to the polls, because it's coming up fast.
It is.
We've got early voting starting in February.
February 17th.
Then a couple of weeks away.
The election day is Tuesday, March 3rd. And if this does go to a runoff, that would be in May. Mm. And you know, everyone says you don't want to go to a runoff. It's around Memorial Day. People aren't paying attention. You know, everyone points back and says, that's how Ted Cruz won.
Right.
Back, 14 years ago against David Dewhurst. Went to a sleepy, July runoff? No one showed up? except Ted Cruz supporters.
Yeah, I'd have to pull the numbers on that, but it was a tiny fraction of registered voters here in Texas. I mean, we already have paltry turnout anyway, even for the primaries. But boy, if you go to a runoff, you're really looking at a tiny little microcosm of voters who show up for that. But again, Chip Roy on the Republican side thinks that they're going to be able to avoid all that, and he's just going to run away with it on March 3rd.
We shall see. But you know what? I do expect to see a lot more from all four of these candidates over the next 2 weeks. But we'll really be watching to see how they clash face-to-face at that Dallas debate, February 17th. We'll stream it on WFAA+. It's a free app you can download on your smart TV. You can watch it. We're also going to put it on YouTube as well, so you'll be able to see it in a number of different places. February 17th, 7 p.m. until 8:30. Their first and only debate. First time you're going to see them all face-to-face with each other. We'll see who comes out on top, if any of them.
And thanks, as always, for watching and or listening here to us. We'll see you again when we do it all again next week.